on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, June 22nd, 2015 edition of InvestTalk and our first show of the summer. It is officially summer, and I welcome all of you to the warm weather that we all are basking in these days. And we are here to be a meeting place for you for discussion about your money and to be a handy source of answers to your questions and hopefully just some great insight into the marketplace as well. We provide that information to you and hopefully information that you wouldn't come across otherwise and give you that proper perspective, because ultimately, making good money decisions is all about having the right frame of mind and the right perspective. Now, I want you to know about a guest we're going to talk with later this week. Many of us are not getting what we're entitled to from Social Security. And a couple months ago, Steve picked up a book called Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maximizing Your Social Security Benefits. And he loved the book. And you know, Social Security system is quite intricate these days, and it's not as straightforward as you might think it is. And this book has been on the New York Times bestseller list for a while. It's not exactly a topic that lends itself to a page-turning book, but this one has people talking, because it's really about kind of gaming the system or finding ways to game the system, and everyone's situation is a little bit different. So it's going to be a very interesting interview with the author of that book, Get What's Yours. So I hope you can join us this Thursday for our guest, Lawrence Kotikoff. Lawrence Kotikoff, he will tell you from his experience how to maximize your Social Security benefits. And this can translate into thousands of dollars more each year and in retirement. If you want help navigating this maze of Social Security, join us. Listen in, ask your call in and ask questions if you want. He'll be available to you. And did you know that there are 2,728 rules of the Social Security system? So you can see how complex it gets. So we could use some of this guidance. Now, what you don't know can seriously hurt you, and wrong decisions about which Social Security benefits to apply for can cost some individual retirees tens of thousands of dollars in lost income each and every year. So just like anything, in today's day and age, with so much bureaucracy and so many laws and rules and the complexities of the world that just get more intricate each and every day, this is one of those examples where what might sound straightforward is entirely not. So he will cover the most frequent benefit scenarios faced by married retired couples, by divorced retirees, by widows and widowers, among other things as well. And he explains what to do if you're a retired parent of a dependent child, disabled or eligible beneficiary who continues to work, and how to plan wisely before retirement. And he will address the tax consequences of all these choices, as well as the financial implications for your investments. So please, if you are interested in the Social Security system, what's going to happen to your benefits coming up and what strategies might help you, you should probably tune in. It's going to be Thursday, June 25th, this Thursday, here on InvestTalk. Now, if you have any other money questions, spring it on us now this hour. We are live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, and our number is 888-99-CHART. So let's take this question now from our 24-hour listener line.
Hey, Steve, this is Brandon in St. Augustine, Florida. I have a quick question for you, and it's in regards to if you had to sit down and answer the question of what is the one most important thing that you look for in analyzing and valuing a particular individual stock, what is that metric? What is that ratio? Or is it some type of formula like owner's earnings, free cash flow, the PE ratio? I know value in a stock is multifaceted. There's many things to take in consideration, but would you say there's one thing that you place at the top of your list when valuing a stock, and what is that? And if you could briefly explain it. Thank you. Bye.
All right, mine would probably be free cash flow yield. That would be my number one metric. I really like that because what it does is it tells you how much money, dollars or euros or whatever, you know, whatever currency you're talking about, how much money is being created for shareholders by the business and how much you're paying for that cash flow. And so what free cash flow is how much money the company is creating through its business. Generally, I mean, that's a very general term. There's certain ways you can spin that slightly, but it's pretty straightforward. Minus what you're paying out in dividends and in capital expenditures to reinvest in the business. And then what is left over was called free cash flow. And then you divide that by, I like enterprise value. Some people just use the market cap of a company. I like enterprise value of the corporation, which is total debt in total market cap. There's some other tiny things in there as well, but generally that's the calculation for enterprise value. So that's what I would say. Free cash flow to enterprise value, that would be the number one metric that I would say, okay, this is how much this company is yielding for me. Then that's quantitative, right? There's quantitative measures of a company, and then there's qualitative measures of a company, right? Now, that would be number one, quantitative. Now, number one, qualitative would be its business. What is its business? And is its business hard to replicate? Are there a lot of competitors? Are they competing with a lot of other companies? And how cyclical is that business? Those are important as well. Because you had an economic downturn and a cyclical company and a sector that is very competitive can be hurt very, very fast and very, very hard because all the other competitors start coming after it if it's the leader, right? Or it's just riding the economic cycle. And as soon as the economic cycle turns, obviously all businesses get hurt, but some more than others. So how resilient is it during an economic downturn? So those are some of the few main things where I start when I'm looking at a particular company. Now, just 13.8% of U.S. households directly own stocks in 2013, according to the Federal Reserve. Obviously, it's a little bit of an old number, but it still was the lowest level in 18 years. So why are stocks so less popular than they used to be? That's our main talking point today, but I also have some other ones to get to as well. One is, how will reaching for yield end? What is the end game? You've talked about this a lot for the past year, year and a half or so, that people are taking way too much risk to get the type of yields they're getting from their stocks or any of their investments, bonds, stocks, real estate. People see the yields that they're getting from the bank, very small, less than 1%, 1%, maybe 2% if you're lucky on anything that's super safe, right? And they say, that's not enough. I need more. Understandably, they need more. But the question is, what type of risk are they taking to get that yield? Usually too much risk. And we've seen it so many times on the show here. People calling about companies, looking for that yield. You know, yields 8, 10, 12% plus. Should I buy this company? And we inevitably say, probably not, because earnings aren't covering the dividend, or this is a area of the market that's super risky, that if you go into a bear market, it could go down 20, 30, 40%, things like that. And most people are unaware or ignore these facts. Okay? So how will it end? We're going to talk a little bit about that. Also, mergers. We're at a ton of mergers recently. So far, deal-making activity in the U.S. has topped over $775 billion so far this year. That's up 50% from the same period last year. And right around the deal volume in 2007, right near the last peak in the market. Does that register with anybody? So we're going to talk about that. What are mergers always about? Optimism? Everyone says mergers, though, it's a sign of optimism in the market. Well, is it a sign of optimism or is it something else? So we'll talk about that as well. And then the Fed dot plot. What does it mean? Where are the Federal Reserve members come out with their dot plot of what they expect for the future with economic growth, with interest rates, etc. Where's everybody sitting? And where are the ones that matter? Where are they sitting? Okay. And then if we have time, we're going to talk about the financial sector overall. But ultimately, we want to hear from you. I want to hear what is on your mind. Give us a call. We have about 40 minutes left in the show. It goes by quick, so if you have a question, start preparing it. Give our number a call. Get on the line, ask it, and hopefully I can give you some good perspective and some good answers and some good information for whatever is bothering you, whatever you're thinking about, whatever financial, whether it's about real estate, taxes, trusts, insurance, annuities, stocks, bonds, commodities, whatever it is, give us a call. I want to hear from you. Now, we have some new checkup dates for you for July. Steve will be in San Diego County on July 8th and in San Jose on July 15th. And his schedule was full for June when he was up there just last week. So we're trying to open up some new dates for these complimentary retirement reviews. To save your spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Make an Appointment button. Now, we are open for you right now with your questions. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
You work hard for your money. Why isn't it working harder for you?
In looking at the chart, do you have to look at this the opposite of like a normal stock?
Ask your question. 888-99-CHART is the number. This is Invest Talk on radio and investtalk.com. Our listener line is open 24/7 for your questions. Hear the answer live on radio and online 4 to 5, or the playback anytime on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's check on the market today. The market was up, modest up day. S&P was up 12, I'll call it 13 points, about 0.6%. The Dow was up around the same, 0.6%, 103 points. The NASDAQ was up 37 points, 0.7%. Small caps were also up about 0.7%. So risk was clearly on, and it was all about Greece. It looks like they're making some progress in Greece. They were supposed to have a deal by the end of today. That doesn't seem like that's going to happen, but it seems like they are making some progress. Now, what does that mean? Is that they seemed far apart on Friday. They came closer together over the weekend, and they look like they're inching even a little closer today. I think now you can put the odds in favor of a Greece deal, but I don't think it's anywhere in the 80 to 90% range. I think it's probably in the 60 to 70% range that they'll get a deal done. So certainly deals could fall apart, and you know, we know this old story, Greece and the EU come to a deal finally at the last hour, and we seem to be pretty close to that last hour. But then again, talking about a deadline with Greece is... it's always a moving deadline, so there's never a hard deadline. So that was really the optimism in the market today. You know, from on the economic side, there were you had U.S. Fed confidence. The Chicago Fed National Activity Index was negative, but it wasn't, you know, terrible. So not a lot of economic news. It's really the market's just worried about Greece. Now, I'm hearing a lot from credit analysts. They're very defensive right now because of Greece, China, the Fed raising rates. So that'll be interesting to see if that feeds into the overall market, equity market. Now, use our listener line right now and try me out on your money question. I'll try to help. 888-99-CHART is our number, and we're going to talk after the break about equity ownership and our stocks less popular than they used to be. You can call right now, 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Just because you didn't see a commission doesn't mean you didn't pay one. Broker commissions, understanding the costs. That's our talking point for Tuesday's podcast. We hope you can join us then.
Now let's get this segment going with a question from our 24-hour listener line. If you are not listening live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, maybe you're listening after hours on investtalk.com, or maybe you're listening via podcast on iTunes or the many other ways that you can get our podcast nowadays, you can always give us a call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 888-99-CHART.
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is Saeed from Oakland, California. I have a question regarding the MasterCard MA and dropped today about $1.25. This is because of the crisis in Greece or the interest rate. And also, I want to know what would be the stocks that are sensitive to the interest rate and the crisis in Greece right now. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at MasterCard. Obviously, everyone knows what MasterCard does and what MasterCard is. What companies would benefit, I think he said, from rising interest rates, and which ones would be hurt from the Greek crisis? I think that's what his question were his questions, all three of those. Well, MasterCard is certainly a great company, but it's not cheap. You know, it's trading at a P ratio of 30. Earnings supposed to go up 11% this year, 19% next year, and I think that's true. I think that's probably fairly accurate as long as spending stays relatively robust. But what you're seeing recently in revenue only grew 3% last quarter, which is a big deceleration from a year ago when it was growing in the mid-teens. So that's a little worrisome on MasterCard. Not much of a dividend to speak of, 0.7%. Not a lot of debt, which is good. So I think this is a good company, a great company to have on your watch list. It certainly has good momentum from a chart perspective. So it's hard to say anything poor about it in that sense. However, this is a risky name because of the high valuation. Is not a cheap stock by any stretch of the imagination. And you go into a recession, you know, this stock could fall dramatically. I'm talking, you know, 50% plus very, very easily. So I don't think this is a safe pick, but it certainly is a great company. And I would have it on a watch list, but I would rather own it much, much lower. I'm talking now it's at 95 and change. I'm talking 75 and change. That's a much more attractive place to be owning MasterCard. But technically, in the short term, it can keep going. So it depends on your time horizon. If you like short term, if you're thinking short term, ride it. But know that there is a decent amount of risk in this name. If you're looking long term, I wouldn't be buying it here. You'll probably get a better entry point in the next 2 or 3 years, and then that's when I would pick MasterCard up. Now, what companies would benefit from rising interest rates? Banks generally do better with rising interest rates. Now, the big question is how high or what point do rates get to a point where it starts causing financial disruptions, meaning companies are defaulting on loans because they can't borrow at low rates anymore. Do housing prices start to go down because of the higher interest rates? Those type of things. And if Greece defaults, certainly there could be financial contagion throughout the financial sector. So there's definitely two sides to that coin there. All right. Hopefully answered all of your questions. And if not, give us a call back. I'll answer any other ones. Now, why are stocks less popular? Now, just 13.8% of U.S. households directly owned stocks in 2013, according to the Federal Reserve. And this is the lowest level in 18 years. Now, from 2007 through February 2015, individual investors have withdrawn $661 billion from U.S. equity funds, including mutual funds and ETFs. So clearly, people are getting out. They're taking their gains, getting even, and they don't like the volatility that equity markets offer. And this is something we work with clients on, is understanding risk tolerance and be able to withstand volatility. Now, while no other period compares to the dark stretch from 1929 to 1954, there are two big drawdowns over the past 15 years. 2000, right after the dot-com crash, and 2008-9 when the housing bubble burst. So you can see that there were big drawdowns in the market, and that's really what is scaring people. Now, what are the alternatives? People aren't buying stocks or not wanting to hold stocks. Where do they have their money? Well, the three major asset class alternatives are cash, bonds, and real estate. Obviously, cash is a loser relative to inflation as long as we have inflation. You know, during deflationary times, cash can be a great thing. Now, many bonds currently offer very little return. Right? Yielding 2, 3%, anything safe. And then real estate historically is only appreciated about the rate of inflation. And has very low liquidity, high transaction costs, etc. They're not easy to sell. So after the break, I want to talk a little about what's the long-term return from stocks, and why is this the case? Why are less people owning stocks? And I kind of gave you a hint just now, but we're going to talk about a little bit more in depth. Now, can you write off your kid's summer camp? If your child is younger than 13, you may qualify for the child care credit. Coming up on Invest Talk Personal, right here on Invest Talk, where you can turn for straight talk about your money. Let's go to George in San Jose. How are you doing, George?
Good afternoon, Justin. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
Asking about Exxon.
Okay.
How low it could go, because apparently it's acting very weak.
Well, it is acting fairly weak, and that's just the oil space in general. You know, there's a lot of upheaval in the industry, and there's certainly going to be companies that go out of business because of their large amount of debt. ExxonMobil is not one of those companies that's going to go out of business, at least anytime in the foreseeable future. So they will hopefully and probably be able to use their heft, their balance sheet, their large revenue base to pick up some of the companies that are going to go bankrupt. So that's the optimistic view on ExxonMobil. So it has been acting fairly weak, but I do think you are getting good long-term value around these levels. Now, could it certainly go lower? Sure. You know, if the oil prices continue to languish or head lower, ExxonMobil will probably do the same, but you're certainly getting some good values here. Do you own it? Are you looking to buy it? What are you thinking?
No, I sold some put for January 2016.
Okay.
And I got like $4 and change, but
okay.
I'm kind of rethinking about it.
What's your strike price on those puts?
I put 85 put for January 16.
Okay. I mean, it's not bad because you'd be getting that effectively around $81 a share, and that's certainly a cheap price. They're going to have some issues in the near term, just like they had back in 2009. But, you know, it's ExxonMobil. They have extremely strong expertise. As long as oil prices don't go back down into the $20 or $30 range and stay there for decades, I think you're going to do all right. So I don't think your put strategy is terrible. In fact, I might even sell a little more puts with like an 80 strike price if you can, maybe a little bit farther out than that. So I like your strategy. I like the company you're doing it on, and I don't think you should be too worried about it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No problem, George. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Ben in San Mateo. How you doing, Ben?
Doing good. I've been looking for a stock that might have some good upside potential as a 10-year investment, and okay. I wanted to know what you thought about Chesapeake Energy, CHK.
Okay. Are you looking for growth here, income? What's your strategy?
For this particular investment, I would be looking for growth. And, okay. You know, oil's been suppressed, and on a bad run lately. And this stock was a high flyer a few years ago. It was up around over $25 a share, and I've read a couple articles that say some nice things about it, and I just wondered if you knew anything about Chesapeake. It's a relatively decent-sized energy company, but it's down in price quite a lot lately.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's down to around $12 a share. And, you know, your statement before, it used to be a 25. I tried to stop people from having that type of mindset because that's a terrible mindset to have when you say, and I'm not trying to pick on you or anything, but it's a mindset a lot of people do have. It's say, oh, well, it was trading at this, so, oh, eventually it'll get back there. There's zero guarantee it will ever do that. So that's certainly not the line of thinking that you want to have. You want to look at the fundamentals of the company. Can it eventually make the type of money, right, that it was making back in those heydays when it was trading at, you know, $25, $30 a share? And back then, when it hit a peak of $34 a share in 2011, it was making about $2.80 a share. Now today, it's actually losing money. It's projected to lose money this year, 16 cents a share, a little bit less next year. Their debt level is not huge, but there's certainly a decent amount of debt there. So they shouldn't burn cash for an extended period of time. Otherwise, you know, suddenly then they have a weak balance sheet and become a bankruptcy type of case. So, you know, I would say this is a high risk name. They had a lot of growth and they could continue to have a lot of growth. But they're going to have a lot of issues as well. So to me, I would rather own ExxonMobil. That would be a safer, better long-term play if I'm looking at the energy space, right? You're looking at Chesapeake in the energy space. It really depends on your risk level. Are you a big risk taker?
Moderately for this position, not in general. I mean, ExxonMobil would be more reflective of what I typically buy.
Yeah, see, then I would go with ExxonMobil because to me this is out of your comfort zone. Now, I'm not saying Chesapeake is a bad name. It certainly is beaten up, and it's still a good company, and it will likely turn around at some point. But the risks are bigger than the typical oil company. So if you're more of a moderate type of risk investor, I wouldn't be investing in Chesapeake. I think they'll probably cut their dividends, so their dividend will probably go away in the near term because they're just not making enough money. And their net income over the last 12 months is negative $4 a share. So you can see there's a lot of issues with this company. They've never really had robust free cash flow, and there's just too much risk for me to say that this is going to be a surefire great long-term play. It could be, but I'd be far more comfortable with ExxonMobil.
Thank you.
No problem, Ben. Thanks for calling. Two energy questions, energy company questions. I like it. Now our talking point today. Let's finish up our talking point today, and it's about how not a lot of people own stocks. It's still a dearth of ownership in stocks as a percentage of our population. And the main reason is if you look at a study that was done by Columbia University, their political science and statisticians, they did a study and they said events at age 18 are about 3 times more powerful in terms of influencing your thinking and preferences as events at the age of 40. And that is true of investing as it is of politics, which was the primary focus of the study. But it shows you that when you grow up, you know, you're in late high school days, college, early adulthood time, that's really when you develop your beliefs, your belief system. And if you're growing up in that time where stocks are not doing very well, you're not going to have a lot of confidence in stocks. That's just generally the trend. You know, and if you grew up when real estate was doing really well, you're going to have the belief that real estate is this fantastic thing. So you have to, that this is what we talk about when you talk about having to understand your biases and not be emotional and think of the fundamentals of any particular investment. And the long-term average real return in the stock market is, since 1926, is roughly 7%. So that includes the crash of 1929. That's well ahead of all major asset classes. But if you grew up during the secular bear market, you're not really going to be a big fan of stocks, right? But if you're 60 plus, for example, right now, you grew up in the 60s, the go-go years, right? Or maybe you grew up, you came of age in the early 80s or in the 90s. And you saw the big giant bull market from 82 to 2000. You have it ingrained in you just naturally that stocks are good. And it's probably in the middle of the two. Some people love stocks, some people don't. Okay? So understand that when you're 14 to 24, that kind of age range, whatever happened, whatever asset class investments were good during that time, you're going to have a penchant for liking those type of companies. Liking those type of investments. Now here in California, you know, our young people are starting businesses. They don't really like stocks. They don't believe in stocks. And you can see that by patent applications. They dropped to a low of 75,000 in 2010 from pre-crisis peak of 155,000. Now they've rebounded all the way back up to 106,000. So what you're seeing now is a lot of entrepreneurship, which is good. And that's why the Silicon Valley is doing so well. And one benefit is obviously real estate in the San Jose, San Francisco area, but is now also the most expensive place to live in the United States, with the highest home prices and the highest levels of income. So a lot of people there, and I'm sure it's a lot of our listeners, since our biggest station is in the Bay Area that broadcasts Invest Talk, they believe in real estate. And real estate certainly has a place. But we've talked about this, and we talked about this back in 2005, 2006. You must diversify. Don't think that one asset class is going to be the key to your riches. Because all asset classes have their day in the sun. And I talk about this in real estate. Real estate has had a tailwind for 30 plus years of lower and lower interest rates. Well, guess what? For the next 30 years, odds are very good that their interest rates are going to be marching higher, not lower. And that's going to be now a headwind for real estate prices. Not to say real estate won't be higher 30 years from now, but its performance will be far different over the next 30 years than it has over the past 30 years. So understanding where your biases are and what What was good when you came of age, I think, is important to understand and be able to build into your proper perspective. Now it's time for Invest Talk Personal, the day-to-day money decisions we make that can have an impact for years to come. Now, so are you getting a little too creative with your tax write-off ideas? Is there a chance that you can write off your kids' summer camp? Now, according to Kimberly Lankford on Kiplinger.com, if you pay for the day camp and a babysitter so that you can work, the expenses can qualify for that credit. And if you're married, filing a joint return, both you and your spouse must work. One spouse may be a full-time student if the other is working, but you both have to be doing something full-time to get that write-off. And your child must be younger than 13 when the care is also provided. Now, the cost of care provided while you work by a day camp, daycare, preschool, or babysit or nanny counts towards the credit, which reduces your tax liability dollar for dollar. Now, the cost of kindergarten and higher grades do not count, but before school and after school care can qualify. So the cost of a sleepover camp, a tutoring camp, they don't count. But if you want to see more details about this write-off, go to Kiplinger.com, search for Can I Write Off My Kid's Summer Camp? That's just one little tidbit that hopefully gives you a little perspective. If you ever have any tax questions, give us a call at the office. We have tax professionals that we work with. We can give you a little more perspective, CPAs that we can reach out to, and we have a really strong network that can help you out if you ever have any tax-related questions or any money-related questions for that matter. Now, that's Invest Talk Personal. Do you have a question about banks, credit cards, or where to put your emergency cash? We're here right now at 888-99-CHART, or write me a note. Click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
Coming up Thursday on Invest Talk, he wrote the book on Social Security benefits. Get What's Yours, the secrets to maxing out your Social Security.
I got a friend $120,000 in widower benefits that he knew nothing about. I got another friend about $20,000 in child benefits he knew nothing about.
His name is Lawrence Kotakoff, and he knows how to help people get what's theirs. Hear his secrets and ask him questions this Thursday. Get What's Yours, the secrets to maxing out your Social Security, right here on Invest Talk.
This call is for Steve from Daniel, Litchfield 1220, religiously in the Bay Area. Just had a quick question about the uranium sector, and in particular a stock, I think it's called Cameco. Don't have the symbol handy, but they've been out of favor, obviously, but the U.S. has a lot of dependence on uranium and wanted to get your take on that, even though it's way down, possibly the stock would be a buy. Thank you, sir.
All right, he's looking at CCJ is the symbol. He's looking at Cameco Corporation. This is a Canadian company engaged in the exploration, refining, and conversion of uranium in the U.S., Canada, and Kazakhstan. Yields about 2.2%, modest debt ratio. This is cheap. I kind of like it. It's definitely been down in the dumps, but the earnings are consistent. I mean, relatively consistent. They're kind of a little bit all over the board, but the volatility isn't big. You know, there's not a consistent increase in the earnings. But it's certainly not a big dive either. So earnings have been going up actually since 2013, and the stock has been declining. So I actually kind of like it. Cameco, CCJ is the symbol. Good cash flow, good company, and it is relatively cheap at the moment. Now it's time to get your question in before we are done for the day. We have about 10 minutes left in the show. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. Any money question is a good question.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Did you know you can access a link to a related article associated with each day's main talking point? Also, you can click back to listings for the past 10 Invest Talks, each listing, the topics, and stocks discussed. Just go to investtalk.com.
Let's go to Joe in the Bay Area. He wants to talk about interest rates. How you doing, Joe? Oh, Joe's gone. Oh, well, then that actually segues perfectly to one of my talking points today, and that's about reaching for yield. Now, after 6.5 years of 0%, yes, the Fed has been at 0% for 6.5 years. And they always said, oh, we don't want to be like Japan. Well, guess what? You're on your way to be Japan. Oh, guess Joe's back. Joe, you there?
I'm here, Joe. Joe's here. Yes, sir, Justin.
Okay, how you doing, Thank Joe? You want to talk about interest rates. What can I help you with?
Well, I heard a couple of comments on the radio today, and both the gentlemen expressed the idea that the government will not increase interest rates. In other words, we can't afford to. It would have too much of an effect on the stock market. And one of the commentators stated that because of this, he thought that the next couple of years, the stock market might rise a fair amount. What is your opinion in that connection?
Well, I do think that they are going to be careful, very careful. They don't – that this is why they talk about the path of interest rate increases being very shallow and slow and very data-dependent. So what I think they're going to do is they're going to raise interest rates at some point by the end of the year, most likely, just slightly, and that's it. 25 basis points, done, and get the market used to that idea and wait a little while, see how it goes. And if the market doesn't really, cause a fuss, then they might do it again. You know what I mean? So I think there'll be a tug between the equity markets and the Fed. But the big question ultimately is, at what point does higher interest rates, does that curb the economy as a whole, not just the stock market, but the economy as a whole? Because certainly the stock market has been fueled by low interest rates, and the economy really has been fueled by the higher stock market more than anything. So, but if you had mortgage rates go to 5.5%, certainly the housing market would be not doing well at all, and that would hurt the economy, and you would probably see some type of a recession. So they're definitely going to be careful with it. But I don't think that necessarily means that the stock market has to go up, though.
Okay, you answered last part of my question. That's great. What's interesting, are you still there, Justin?
Yes.
Okay. What's interesting is that when my wife and I bought a home, we paid 7% mortgage all the way through for 29 years.
Mm-hmm.
Folks today are accustomed to these very, very low rates.
Mm-hmm.
Back in our day, 6%, 7% was normal, and if somebody had a 4 or 5% mortgage interest rate, they had a real bargain. So the folks today, I think, have a definite opinion on what interest rates should be.
So. Oh, yeah. The long-term average is 7% or so on the mortgage. So
yeah.
You're right. And people are very addicted to these low interest rates, and that's why there's so much risk out there in the marketplace on all types of assets because of these low interest rates, and people have been chasing yield, and that's what I was going to get to in a moment. And, like I said, interest rates go back to 5.5%, 6%, 7% on the mortgage rate. The housing prices are going to have to go down unless incomes are going to go up a lot. So I agree with you, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Fed handles this. Thanks, Joe.
I think for a while it'll be a shock to the buyers.
Absolutely, it will be.
Okay, thank you for your help.
Thanks, Joe.
Excuse me, go ahead.
And so let's get quickly to what I was talking about before about, people are six, it's been 6.5 years since the Fed raised interest rates, and Janet Yellen even said that there's some evidence of reach for yield behavior, and it's happening in a lot of places. Investors are buying long-term bonds to riskier bonds to high-yielding equities. Unfortunately, none of these are good options for investors seeking safety in yield, and all of these require a higher level of risk tolerance than most investors appreciate. So there's senior loan ETFs like BKLN that people are chasing, the junk bond ETFs and mutual funds for people are chasing yields. Now, in 2008, leveraged loans and high-yield bonds declined over 30%. And many investors are not able to handle this type of volatility. And there's other types of ETFs out there as well that have leverage, etc. And it's just crazy to see. And this is something we're trying to help our clients with. And hopefully everyone that listens to Invest Talk understands this and tries to avoid it. Now it's time to wrap it up for the day. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPB Financial, thank you for listening. And we hope you have a good evening. Let's meet here again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.